This session on slavery, we actually do not have any notes for you. This was a presentation that was given by some students a few years back. And I can't remember whether they actually had notes or not, but I don't find them here. But I think you'll benefit from what they studied that will, you know, stimulate our own thinking in regard to the concept of slavery, how it actually came about, the interaction between pagan slavery and Israelite slavery. The Bible's often criticized the fact that we do find slavery in the Old Testament that God allowed and managed, moderated. What did it actually say? And how did that actually impact the early church moving on into New Testament? And what kind of attitude should you and I have about slavery today? I want you to think about this a bit, because I think we are quite uncritical about what we hear and haven't really thought through what maybe the options might be. Aristotle said that the slave is a living tool. And the tool is a lifeless slave. What a view towards slavery, huh? What a low view of people from a man that we hold in great admiration in many ways, with Aristotle. Where did it actually come about? I'm trying to think through, even if from the book of Genesis, we do have Hagar, who was a slave of, or servant, sometimes slave and servant, that kind of hard to tell the difference between them. I guess the real difference between a slave and a servant is whether it's voluntary or not. They were a lot more acceptable to the idea of having a status that remained that same status throughout life than we are today. We've seen a lot of freedom, a lot of opportunity, where a slave can become a king. That's the extreme in our own day. How did they actually become slaves? Sometimes they were prisoners of war, and the ones who lost the battle ended up becoming slaves. You see this actually with the battle of David and Goliath, at least the promise. 1 Samuel 17, the Philistines say, they agree, and the Israelites agree to this battle between their champions. If Goliath wins, then the Israelites become their slaves. If David wins, or one of the Israelites wins, then the Philistines become their slaves. Of course, they didn't do that. They all ran away, and they had a battle at the end of that. You don't see the Philistines going, okay, well, guys, here, yeah, let's shake hands. You won the battle. Yeah, okay, well, I'll be your slave now. No, they go fight, you know, and the Israelites had a great victory that day. Sometimes people became slaves because they were in debt, and they could not pay the debt, and so these men sold themselves, or I guess women as well, as a slave to work off the debt. We have a similar concept today that's called credit. Would you like to extend credit? We would like to extend credit to you. Every time I get one of those emails, we're offering you credit. I read that as, we're offering you slavery.
Yeah.
No thanks. I think I'm doing fine just right now. Sometimes people are born to debtors. So if you're the child of a slave, you also would be a slave. Sometimes people were captured, as Joseph was captured and sold into slavery, similar to an idea of being a prisoner of war, although there was no war between Joseph and his brothers. Well, there was a war, a sibling war, if you will. And then sometimes people would voluntarily become a slave. You say, really? Who would ever want to do that? Well, the Old Testament records about slaves that are treated wonderfully by their masters. I believe it's right after the giving of the Ten Commandments. Isn't it Exodus 21? It says if a slave has worked for 6 years, he is, under Hebrew law, offered his freedom.
Yes.
But in some cases, they enjoyed the treatment of their master, and so they voluntarily said, I would like to remain a slave. And you remember what the custom was?
To pierce
their ear. Exactly, to pierce their ear. They would put their ear up to the door. Okay, so they would go to the door, like I'm going to the door here of the classroom. They would open the door, stick their earlobe there, and stick the an awl, stick it through the earlobe so they'd have a little hole in their ear. Doesn't that sound just awful? Most of you ladies have done that to yourself. And I don't know, I suspect they put a little... That was voluntary, right?
Yeah.
You were not an involuntary slave of your mother, right, you ladies? To have these pierced ears. They only did one. But the idea of going to the door was that you're identifying with that house, with that household, and so that you could have the freedom to go in and outside of that doorway. But think about it from the standpoint of the one who said he was committing himself to his master for life. He would walk through that doorway many, many times, wouldn't he? He'd walk back and forth, inside, out of the house, doing his duties, and he'd see the little hole right there in the doorpost of the house. Ooh, that's the one right at my height where my earlobe got pierced. It would be like a reminder to him, wow, I've made a commitment to this master who is providing food for me, shelter for me, safety for me, for life. I've made a commitment to him. He's made a commitment to me. Do you see what a good picture this is of really what we do with the Lord Jesus? We are voluntary slaves.
Yeah.
Paul said, I am a bond slave of Jesus Christ. Not because anybody forced him to do it, but Paul was a voluntary slave of the Lord Jesus for life, as if his ear had been pierced. And Jesus has said, yes, I will take you. I will protect you. I will provide for you. I will honor you as you honor me. That's a wonderful thing, yes. Frankly. We are slaves for the Lord Jesus now in this life, so that we would reign with him in the next life. It's not a bad proposition, is it?
It's not bad, yeah.
Do you have a king who's really oppressive to you in this regard? Has Jesus done a bad job with you? Well, I tell you, I'd choose to be his slave than slave of anybody else any day. And it's not that you choose Jesus or you don't choose any kind of slavery at all. It's not a choice between slavery and freedom. It's a choice between slavery to Jesus or slavery to sin in reality. But anyway, I'm getting off on all that. But so there are different forms of slavery. Not everybody had the same even social status as a slave. They were certainly the lowest on the social ladder. There were house slaves, temple slaves, work slaves, slaves to king, city slaves. Even many slaves served as artisans. They were quite skilled. Especially when you get in the New Testament, you see many who were slaves who were actually more educated than their masters. But because of the misfortunes of war and that sort of thing, your thoughts on this? What's this lady? I really can't say, but it doesn't really look that good. It looks like it should be replaced. I guess she's cleaning the floor or something. Yeah. Yeah, she's a slave who's waxing the floor or cleaning the floor. The Sumerian word for slave means a person from a foreign land. Well, that's kind of interesting, huh? So the Sumerian idea has this concept that because people have lost a battle, that therefore they would become slaves. And the Sumerians used them to construct their canals, plant and harvest crops. That's the Sumerian definition. Other definitions would be of the state of a person purchased by another. So if a person is owned by someone else, then they would be considered a slave. Right? The basic idea is that the control of the person is against his or her will. I mean, even if you go as a voluntary slave and you offer yourself as a slave, you are giving your will over to the master. You have the will to become a slave, but once you do that, then you say you are going to follow your master. That's exactly what we do with the Lord God now. He doesn't force us. He enables us to have the privilege to be his servants. And then when we do so, we're actually saying, I'm going to follow your will, not my own will. It's a wonderful picture of really what we have in terms of being committed to the Lord Jesus. Slavery in ancient Rome, or moving forward now, but the Romans considered slaves as things. They didn't consider slaves as people that have rights. Here's where we have had the benefit of 2 millennia to try to improve on the Roman idea in modern countries like Singapore and other countries that you represent, where we do distinguish between things and people. And I'm glad to see that Singapore has come up with the maid charter, spelling out the rights that maids have, that they're not considered to be slaves here, even though I think every one of them should be paid better. But, you know. The Romans were different from the Greeks in this regard. Because the Roman idea of slaves was lower, no different than livestock. Whereas in the Greek idea of slaves, they had slavery, they had some more freedoms. The Romans denied the majority of rights, not allowed to marry or to form families, whereas that was not the case with the Greeks. And you see in the Jewish law in the Old Testament, slaves were free to marry, to have children, to live within the household. So there's some more technical terms here. A peculium was an allowance, or a manumission was a slave given freedom and released from all of his duties. I don't think you need to know all these details. But in terms of looking back farther to Egypt and to what we understand from the Old Testament, we see slavery quite common. We see, as I noted earlier, that Joseph was sold into slavery. So Potiphar's household had slaves. And people are still, the Egyptologists are still trying to figure out how those pyramids got built. They surmise that slavery was a big part of this, because, I mean, how do you actually pull that, all that together? Same in Babylon. There was a social strata with the slave at the very bottom of the food chain, you might say. Most of them POWs. But a free citizen could be sold into slavery due to his offenses or his debts. So you could actually lose your freedom and become a slave. You would never know 10 years from now whether you'd be a slave or not. And in their case, it was almost impossible for slaves to become free in Babylon. And we will see later on, you'll read some from the Code of Hammurabi, and you'll find that there's actually different laws for the same crime that apply to slaves as opposed to those who are freemen. They saw it as a part of the social order. And I think in Hammurabi's time, again, we're looking at around 1800 BC, they were seeing it as, well, look, compared to before, there were no written laws, and the king could just do whatever he wants to. So it really depends on what you're comparing this to. Hammurabi, to his credit, in old Babylonia, tried to have some level of objectivity and not change the rules all the time. We can learn from that, don't you think? Don't you think the same rules ought to apply to this, to different people? Whatever political parties in power and that sort of thing. I say this in regard to my own country that seems to keep changing the rules all the time depending on who's in power. And this is why we have a constitution. This is why we have written laws. And we've had this opportunity to learn from these things from slaves in antiquity and these other... We're trying to make improvements. The problem is human nature hasn't changed. That's their big problem. Population of the entire defeated land was commonly taken into slavery. We see this with Thutmose III, that slaves were part of the tribute paid by the defeated foe. 295 male and female slaves, 68 horses, 3 gold dishes, and 3 silver dishes. There you go. There's the price for losing the battle, you know. Joshua even subjected the Gibeonites to slavery. And now, it certainly was better than execution. And the Gibeonites were agreeable to that, as were the Israelites. We also have slavery of women. Here's a relief depicting the Assyrians being taken in captivity, where there was really no hope for these women forced into prostitution. The way people treated women, frankly, is just abhorrent by just about any moral standard. Especially as you look at Assyria, Babylon. You guys will do a paper, many of you, on women. And I think one of the things you'll find is that what the Old Testament says about women is actually bringing them much higher status than they had with most pagan societies. Maybe with the exception of Egypt, where some women had some rights that women didn't have in Israel. But you have to look at it from the whole society as a whole. It was readily legitimized. It was slavery was just plain accepted throughout the world, all the way up to 200 years ago, 300 years ago. If you know your history, you know how slavery was eradicated. You remember how in the Western world, how it was eradicated? What was his name? Oh, maybe you don't know. William Wilberforce was a British Christian who made it his life goal to eradicate slavery in the British Empire. And God was faithful to help him see that before he died. And that eradication of slavery in Britain in the early 1800s paved the way for the Emancipation Proclamation in the United States in 1865 under President Lincoln, or 1863 actually. And this has led to the reduction of slavery throughout the world as Britain and the United States have dealt with their own sins and had to really come before God and live out, as we have in my own country's constitution or the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal. What does that mean? All men are created equal. That part was debated during the founding of the United States, and it was too big of an issue that was too divisive, so they allowed slavery to continue. But then we had to fight a horrible, bloody civil war 100 years later over that particular issue. But most ancient cities were built by slaves, pyramids, and I would say all the way up to our present, much of what's been built by slaves. And here's where we need to be people who we will recognize what God, before God, that we have to treat people with the kind of fairness that has not been characteristic through the ages. So there was definitely a low morality in the ancient Near East civilization. Little value on human life, viewing slaves as property like animals. And of course, their treatment largely depended on the character of the master. In early Egypt, slaves were sacrificed and buried with the dead king to serve him in the netherworld. But this is also done in almost our modern times, right? Shiva? Wasn't that the whole practice of sati, of widow burning, was practiced in India all the way up into the early 1800s.
But that is wife, right?
Yeah, the wife being burned along with her husband. In essence, she's like the slave. She loses her life when her husband loses her life. When William Carey came to India, that was one of his life goals, like William Wilberforce, to see this practice of sati abolished. And God did it. Before William Carey died, it became illegal. Now, that doesn't mean all of a sudden women were treated with equality in India immediately, but at least it was on the books that women are equal to men. And they're made in the image of God as men are. And it takes a while for people to change their views on these sort of things. But I really admire these men of God who had this sense of justice as a life goal for them. And don't let you be influenced by those who say that it's those Christians out there that really are not fighting for justice. These people don't know their history at all. It was the Christians who fought for justice. It was the Christians who fought against the whole concept of slavery. Yes, Christians did take on slaves in various countries. But it was also other Christians who said, this practice has got to be abolished. This practice of burning widows in India and etc. Slaves would work in mines, long hours on meager rations, worked to death, frankly. They didn't have any problem with slaves dying in work. It's like, well, that's, you know, machines die, so, you know, that's what happens. Just replace them. It's that low view that people had of slaves. Again, here in Egypt, here's the title of property. In it, the slaves were given to his wife, and the wife was also free to give away children born to him by his slaves. And we are learning a lot more than in the past about the whole concept of slavery. We see Daniel sold into slavery as well as Joseph in the Old Testament. Slavery is a product of the fall of man, has existed since the fall, especially when we're talking about slavery where a person is unjustly enslaved. But for many, it was a means of survival. Even to our present day as well, where we have women who try to survive as a slave prostitute. You know, and there is no other option for them. God is using many to help bring them out of that. And I certainly don't agree with that. But it's certainly better than killing in the case where conquered enemies were just wiped out wholesale, to be selling them into slavery is better. But it's certainly not, you know, like in Joshua 9, the Gibeonites preferred slavery over death. And Joseph's brothers didn't kill him. That was the initial idea in Genesis 37. But they later on resorted to slavery instead. A lot of times there could be a warm affection between a master and a slave. We shouldn't think that slavery always resulted in animosity, because there were good masters and there were good slaves. There were people who had a harmonious relationships even in that kind of a situation. That's why the Old Testament allowed this idea of a slave becoming a slave for life to his master, because of the good relationship, as I noted in Exodus 21. Instead of being freed after 6 years, they could be protected, really, for life from their perspective. Slavery was part of the world, and so under the Mosaic Law, we have slavery noted in the book of Deuteronomy and other books, Exodus, etc. And there are various laws managing slavery in the Old Testament, like laws on acquiring slaves. Only foreign slaves could be made permanent slaves under Israel, whereas Hebrew slaves had to be freed after 6 years. So there was this option of warring captives being made slaves as restitution for debt and by default on debts. We see that people could purchase slaves. Leviticus 25, foreigners could be bought and sold as slaves. You could not kidnap a freeborn person to sell as a slave, though. The law prohibited that. And the prices of slaves, the Old Testament sought to put some level of justice in this by varying the price depending on how many years until the year of Jubilee when the slaves would be freed. And slaves, some of them became slaves by manumission. There was a manumission law that allowed for slaves to be freed after 6 years. Right? Slaves of the wife were given by their master must go alone, though, under the Old Testament law. Can I explain why? Maybe God wanted to make sure that husbands and wives would stay together. And better for him to stay with his wife, who is still under slavery, than to break up the family. But they had that option of being able to stay together. And freed slaves were released with liberal pay. They were not to be just sent out there without any money at all, so that they would end up in slavery again or live in poverty. There was a status that you see in the manumission, which means the freeing of slaves. You could not take a runaway slave and return him to his master, though. Runaway slaves were to go free, as the return of a fugitive was forbidden. And this prevented a whole kind of network of people, like we found in my country, who would make it their job to go get runaway slaves and treated people with such cruelty to bring them back to their masters. And I think God in his wisdom didn't want to allow that to happen. In the year of Jubilee, so every 50 years, all Hebrew slaves were made free in connection with the restoration of property and land. That was God's plan. Slaves were part of the owner's family. Slaves were granted the right of Sabbath rest. Don't believe you find that in other societies. Exodus 20 specifically says that on the Sabbath, you are to rest, and your slave is to rest, and your donkey, and your ox. I mean, if the animals are going to get a day off, don't you think the slaves ought to get a day off? God said that in Exodus 12, the taking of the Passover, the slaves ought to be there. They're part of the family. They should take the Passover as well. They perform a very very good function there. In fact, masters would be punished if they killed their slaves. Well, you don't find that in Rome. You don't find that in Babylon, where they just considered them to be property. You know, if I want to destroy my computer, I have the freedom to destroy my computer here. But the computer has value, so I don't want to do that. But if it's only property, I can do whatever I want with my property. But slaves were not deemed to be less than human under the Old Testament law. They were to be set free if they were maimed by their master, Exodus 21, 26, 27. So you mistreat a slave, and you mess up that slave's arm or whatever, you have to set them free. And there was laws on slave marriages. Single slaves could be given wives by their master. So being a slave didn't mean you would never be able to get married. Usually foreign wives, but they were given as permanent slaves and they were not released after 6 years. But there's some huge differences between, as I noted before, the law of Hammurabi, which says if a liability has become due against a man, he sold his wife or daughter or son, for 3 years they shall do work. In the fourth year they're released. There's a term of release here under Hammurabi, similar to what we find in the Mosaic Law, which is similar, but 6 years. Under Hammurabi, people could, if a man marries a female slave, his beloved, and the male slave later is given his freedom, she will not be evicted, she'll not leave the house. It's the same idea under the Mosaic Law of Exodus 21, but he's free to go alone if he so chooses. Violation of a slave woman under Hammurabi, or actually the law of Ur-Nammu, was, you violate this woman, you're virgin, violate this virgin, you pay 5 shekels of silver. Not much money in Babylon. A little bit higher, well, quite a bit higher, 20 shekels under another Babylonian law. But under the Mosaic Law, there must be due punishment. This could be much more severe. What do you do with a runaway slave? Under Hammurabi, or under the Babylonians, that was allowed under the Mosaic Law, do not hand him over to his master. That was not allowed. I won't go into all these details, but in general, what we've got here is we've got a higher status granted to people under the Mosaic Law than you do for Hammurabi, which is about that time. You know, Hammurabi's about 300 years before the time of Moses, not significant time difference. But there's too much to cover all, so I think I'll jump a bit here, especially when this part is actually talking about Romans, and perhaps you'll be talking about slavery under Rome when you have your New Testament foundation course. So when I asked students to do this presentation, they were jumping on into the New Testament era as well. Well, let's go back to the Old Testament. Here on slide 47, which I don't think you have this way because it's I'm updating this, adding this today. If a man, this is Leviticus 19:20. If a man has sex with a slave girl whose freedom has never been purchased, but who is committed to become another man's wife, he must pay full compensation to her master. And since she's not a free woman, neither the man nor the woman will be put to death. This sounds pretty severe on the woman. She's a slave girl, and it doesn't seem to be, I mean, it doesn't take the man's life, but he is able to pay full compensation. She's not a free woman, but the man's not put to death, the woman's not put to death. That sounds like a... When we read some of these things, it looks like there is a very harsh perspective toward women. But you have to... Here's my big point again. You have to compare this to other societies at the same time. And when you do so, you'll see that there's a higher status placed on women than what we find elsewhere. The other thing I want you to think about is the fact that in Judaism, there were no prisons or jails in the Law of Moses. I never actually noticed this until recently, where this issue of has become a big deal in the state of Arizona in my country, because one of the sheriffs has taken prisoners and he's had them to use, he's used them to actually do pickup of garbage on their, on the streets and that kind of thing. People are saying he's actually abusing these people to have them be outside and to do some manual labor. They actually should be incarcerated in their cells and given the best food. This whole thing has really gone crazy in the state of Colorado as well. The best food of all institutions in all government institutions in Colorado is in the prisons. Second to the prisons, the second best food is in the universities. In other words, the prisoners are fed better than the university students to try to keep them happy and all this. And there's this whole issue of putting people in jail has come to the fore. Let me read you what one thinking person, I think, has said about this, okay? We have slavery instead of jails in the Mosaic system. Okay, no jails, but there is slavery. Everybody says slavery is so inhumane, but then we take people and we put them into jails for years and years and years. Think about it. He says, have you ever noticed that there are no prisons in the law of Moses? People were stoned, beaten, fined, but never sent to prison or confined in any way, including shackles or stocks, etc. This brand new study sheds a positive light on the role of slavery they had in rehabilitating criminals and providing welfare for the poor. Confinement was something completely foreign in the Jewish legal system. And I'd invite you to read, if you want to read the article at bible.ca, no jails or prisons in Judaism. It's in the notes section of this particular slide. And I actually want to leave you there. I want to leave you to just talk with the person next to you about this concept. Do you agree or do you disagree with the concept of slavery, which the Old Testament, I wouldn't say approves, but I would say it manages. Would you agree that that is better than putting people in jail, as we see happening to Joseph for 2 years down in a prison in Egypt, and we see among the other places where we did not see it among the Jews? I leave the decision for you to talk in the remaining minutes here of class to whether you think that's correct, and then I'll let you go to lunch. Thank you for your good attention.